welcome to Check It Out, Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two games by the people for the people and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Lauber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this week we're doing Tyranny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tyranny is a CRPG by Obsidian, published by Paradox. Runs on the same engine as Pillars of Eternity.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike Pillars, which actually just announced a sequel that's running a Fig campaign right now.
Yeah, that's like all based on like the seas.
Yeah.
And stuff. That's interesting.
It sounds really, really interesting. And yeah. I backed it immediately just because this is great. And so is Pillars. And I will support anything Obsidian does ever. But this is a little bit of a reusing of the same engine to capture a really cool setting. Yeah, Gary, is there, I think the best way probably to go about this is to try and capture what the setting is and talk about mechanically what's neat about it and what's changed from Pillars, and then we'll mm-hmm. probably have to go into spoilery stuff to continue anything
hit some
on
high
from there.
Points of the plot.
Cool.
I think we don't want to end up doing like a full watch out for fireballs
totally
on this, so like is the idea. So if you're looking for that, that's not this. That might happen in the future, like we might do it for WoW, because spoiler, like I really love this game.
Yeah, me too.
And it's built to be replayed, like I will replay it.
Real quick, check your Steam hours for it if you can, real quick.
Yeah. I think it's not actually very long.
Mine's inflated a bit because I know I left it up for a little while, but I'm at 33 hours, so it's probably about 28 to 30 hours of gameplay in there.
Yes, which is something that I actually really like about it.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm at 33 hours too.
Whoa.
It's not a 60-hour WRPG where you do like everything. It's short.
Yes.
It is, we'll get into it when we talk about the plot stuff. Some of the only criticisms I've heard of it is that it kind of ends on a sequel kind of hook.
Absolutely.
There's going to be another one. I was very happy with what I got and the amount of time I got and everything.
Me too. Yeah.
So let's talk about the kind of premise first and kind of go into the setting with that. So like the idea here is that they wanted to make a game where it's a world like after the bad guys won.
Yes.
This is, you are working for the bad guys.
Yeah.
But not in that like nihilistic, like hatred way or like postal. You know, it's not, hey, go do some war crimes.
Right.
You know, it's not that. It's just, you know, what happens after, you know, a world has been taken over by Sauron or, you know, what have you.
Right. So the primary setting is a place called Teridus that has been almost entirely taken over by an overlord named Kyros, who's, godlike, all powerful. No one's seen him. So no one knows if it's a male, female, if it's a beast. Like there's all sorts of rumors about who or what Kyros actually is.
Mm.
But Kyros rules by means of these individuals called Archons that themselves are all immensely powerful in very individual ways.
Yes.
It's not like they've all been granted some magical ability or anything. They're all what they were good at sort of becomes this beyond human power of their own.
Like X-Men.
Yeah.
Like they've got essentially like superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
They're very powerful. These kind of like general kings. That Kyros uses.
Yeah, they seem to come into their power under Kyros. Like they were already good at something, and that ability of theirs becomes superhuman.
Yes.
And it's really neat.
And exactly what causes is a little bit whether it actually is like taken from Kyros,
mm-hmm.
and we don't know, or if it's something to do with the magic of the world.
Right.
You know, as these kind of things. So I think those are the kind of questions that would be answered in Tyranny 2.
Yeah, there's some little legs as to people sort of becoming Archons without being under Kyros, like mm-hmm. without being a direct kind of or in any sense like subjugate of him. But
mm-hmm.
But that's very rare. Most of them are direct reports to him. You play a Fatebinder who are the subjects of the Tunon the Adjudicator. Mm-hmm. Who's an Archon who's basically he's the Archon of Justice, so he's basically the judge of all the land.
Mm-hmm.
And the Fate Binders are who he uses out to be all of his little judges and executioners.
Yes.
They go in, restore order, reduce conflict, and lay down the law of Kyros.
And edicts, specifically.
And edicts.
Yes.
That's the primary, or the biggest thing that they do, is they hand down laws directly from Kyros that have an actual spellbinding aspect to them.
Yeah. So it's like a sentence written on a piece of paper, mm-hmm. and once it's read aloud, that thing happens.
Yes.
And they're usually conditional.
Yes.
This is not too much of a spoiler. The game starts out with you sent to read one that mm-hmm. gives there's a conflict, kind of a quagmire in this area that is they're taking over, and it's, hey, if we don't take care of this, everyone dies.
Right.
And then that would happen. Like, it is a thing, and it can happen. You can actually get a game over from it.
Absolutely. The game starts, there's two of these Archon generals who are both leading two separate armies. The Disfavored are led by Graven Ash, and they're a very organized, small elite force. And then there's the barbaric Scarlet Chorus, led by the Voices of Nerat.
Who's the Archon of Secrets.
Archon of Secrets, yeah. And so these two armies are both trying to take over the last kind of vestige of Teridus. And unfortunately, among trying to take it over, as per Kyros's will, they've also sort of gone at each other's throats. So
yes.
You're sent in to put in this edict saying that this will happen. You will both participate, both groups, and you will work together to take Vendrin's Well.
Yes, and it it doesn't go smoothly, of course.
No, it doesn't.
So the they're very different philosophically, these two factions. The Disfavored are elite. They are kind of nationalistic, very haughty and arrogant, but they're not, like, they don't torture people.
Right.
You know, they're like swift justice, kind of like lawful evil.
Yeah.
Kind of feel like.
Super and then, lawful evil.
And then the Voices of Nerat, they recruit people. They have this kind of like, you know, this idea that anybody can serve. You know, it's better to have somebody serve. They can script people
mm-hmm.
when they bring them there and kind of have this, like, you know, howling horde of things. And the Archon of Secrets is very much about this kind of collectivism and this kind of, everybody kind of being under, you know, operating as this unit,
right.
As opposed to an individual. It is less kind of nationalistic and is, like, closer to, like, a neutral evil or a chaotic evil.
Yeah. However, their methods of what they do to the people of the lands they're conquering are tend to be somewhat, it rides the line between being a lot worse for the people, because what they tend to do is force everyone to fight each other once they've taken over and conscript the greatest among them.
Yes.
Whereas it's much more likely for the Disfavored to just off everybody.
Yeah, like everybody just dies and we don't need anybody else. And part of the reason why they can do that is because, as I mentioned, these Archons have different powers, and the Archon of War of the Disfavored heals his units.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he people don't die because they have his, like, guard, his aegis.
Yeah, he watches over them.
Yes. So it's very cool. You're starting off in that. That's kind of your premise, and the time period is really cool. If this was just kind of a fantasy game, I think it would be significantly kind of less neat. But it's a Bronze Age, like, Rome.
Yeah.
Kind of setting, like Rome or Greece, like, you know, like iron weapons are king.
Yeah,
You know, it's low tech in a way that is really, really cool and flavorful.
Mm-hmm.
That I really ended up loving. And that's kind of where you start off. We'll talk a little bit more about the plot when we get to it. But this being an Obsidian game, you are not forced to do, like, anything, really.
Yeah.
So you do not have to go along or ally yourself. Like, it starts off, like, it seems like it is going to be, which of these things do you think is less evil?
Mm-hmm.
That's not what it is. You can interact with this in several different ways. It's, you know, four major ways that kind of have subways,
right.
Not, you know, like home of the $5 foot long subways, but like different, different, you know, smaller ways that they can articulate. Mechanically, this is a big step up, I think, from Pillars of Eternity.
Yeah.
Due to a couple, like, I was kind of racking my brain because I hadn't played Pillars in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to, so I was looking at, like, the features, I watched some footage and I was trying to remember, realize what it is. And it comes down to a couple things. One of them is that you control a four-person party instead of six.
Yes.
So combat is much tighter and smaller.
I like it a lot.
Yes. So that's really good. The magic system is not only its own very cool thing, but it also does not have friendly fire.
Which was, was that a thing in Pillars? I don't remember.
Yeah, Pillars had more kind of area effects and stuff. This, you don't have to, you do have to manage it for hitting your enemies, but you don't have to worry about hurting your friends, which allows you to kind of get in there. Like, it is more of a melee.
Yeah, it's very close.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
The item system is also much more what you're kind of expecting. In Pillars, it was very, there's only so many items, and then there's just different rankings of them. Mm-hmm. There's just kind of different quality levels. This brings a lot more unique items that can also, their quality can also be increased as a sort of general buff to everything, but there's a much bigger pool of individual items that have individual special effects, and it feels much closer to a traditional CRPG where you can find some really nice epic items that do something that no other item's going to do.
Yes.
Which seems sorely missing in Pillars. It was, the items in there were not very drawing.
No. That was not a super fun part of that. The battle system is very similar to Pillars. It's a little bit more, there's a little bit more of that MMO, like drawing aggro kind of side to it, disengaging, things like that, a third edition D&D flavor to it. A lot of that was in Pillars, but it's a little bit, it feels like it's a little bit more emphasized here because of the smaller party.
Yeah, it's drawing been cleaned up a little bit more for sure too.
Yeah, and it's been cleaned up is a good way to put it. And then the actual the two biggest differences mechanically as far as combat goes, and we'll talk about the differences kind of mechanically, dialogue stuff wise, is this one the smaller thing is cooperative attacks.
Yeah, those are neat.
I love that. Like the idea that, and that relates to the kind of dialogue stuff and the story stuff, but the idea that everybody, you know, your main character with anybody else has a certain thing they can do. And then depending on their relationship, you get more verbs for these very powerful kind of like chain, you know, game changing attacks. And then the coolest thing, you know, my favorite thing that I want to have lifted in like every game is the magic system. Which I love.
It's so neat.
It's very, very good. It's this idea. It's modular.
Yeah.
You build spells like using this build point system where you have these different, like, here's the quality of it. Like, this is about ice, and this is about a field, or this is about armor, or this is about a buff, or this is about you know, a melee attack. And then you can just add qualities to it.
Yeah.
Depending on a certain stat. So you're like, you're building a little like Warhammer army.
It really gets going once you have a whole bunch of the little add-ons. So, but by default, you know, you're just picking a kind of study, you know, like you said, ice, fire, and then a shape to it. But once you combine those two, you can add on so many different little add-ons. And each time you add one of these on, it ups the lore requirement, which is your stat that allows you to learn better spells. Mm-hmm. So the best spells are going to be super high lore, but it's not just, you know, combining these two things gives me a really powerful spell. Rather, if I take these two and then tack on this modifier, which makes it do more damage, and this modifier, which suddenly turns it into a AoE when it wasn't before, this little bit, which makes it chain, you know, chain attack between enemies, and this one, which combines ice and fire together to give it two types of damage, you get like really incredibly powerful spells that are super fun to throw out there.
Yep. Everything operates on a cooldown, you know, so that interplays with the armor. Like, that's why you can't have a heavily armored sorcerer. Like, you can, they can wear it, but it just means they can do spells less. So you have a lot of build options for that. Absolutely. Individual spells and for characters. And that expands, as I mentioned, those cooperative attacks to this the system of fear and loyalty, which is just phenomenal. And the closest thing it is, and just moving to, you know, some of the same designers and kind of philosophy, is Alpha Protocol. Where Alpha Protocol is amazing because getting people to hate you is an advantage, right? Yeah. So like, no matter how, your relationship will give you an advantage in this situation. And that's how this works as well. You don't have to rule through respect. Like, you don't have to, it's not a fucking BioWare game where it's just like, like, let's increase the meters.
How much have I sucked up to these people?
Yeah, exactly. How many times have I just like pushed this, the good button on this guy? If you want, if there's somebody who you want, you can intimidate them into staying with you, and you are rewarded for it, and it's as mechanically sound as the alternative. Because the, you know, I've said this like a thousand times, but like, I never need to really play another game about the power of friendship. I'm not saying I need every game to be like this grim dark thing where you rule by, but having that option to rule by fear or to like, and it's modular too. Like, I had people on my team who I was like, this person's cool. Like,
this person loves me to death and worships at
and
my feet.
I'm in line with this person. This other person, they're useful, so I need to keep them around, but fuck them. And like, just having that option is really, really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially with the two different factions, both of which are trying to pull you two different ways, but they also both give you a companion.
Yes.
And so you can make real good use of siding with someone and being real buddy pal with the companion they give you and just treating the other one like shit. Like, it's really fun.
Yeah.
I think one thing that is really kind of undercut too, that puts this game in, it makes all the dialogue of this game really interesting, is that you actually start the game in a position of respect and power.
Well, and that choose your own adventure, like the actual opening to it is super good, where it's this long choose your own adventure thing, similar to like in Firewatch or whatever, except it has like a long, long tail. Like the last act of this game, you will still hear things about, you know, what you did very early on. Like you'll get the last chapter and be like, oh, you're the guy who did this, you know, and you can use that.
You walk through the entirety of Kyros is taken over of essentially this last leg of the continent, right? So you as a player have been a part of Kyros's takeover for a long time.
Yeah.
And so you do all of the windup through various different choices, and all of your choices have a meaningful impact on the story, like to the extent of like what crazy curse has been placed on this specific area of the land.
Yes.
It's really interesting how much that choose your own adventure plays into the story the whole way through.
It's really good. And you know, it should be noted, like the writing kind of across the board is really good.
Of course.
Like, you know, because it's Obsidian and they do really good work, and it's uniformly interesting. That kind of loyalty and fear thing also is with Wrath and what's the opposite of Wrath for factions?
It was like favor.
Yeah, Wrath and favor with factions. And again, it is a benefit thing. Like if you, and or a detriment. Like if a group really likes you, they might be willing to do more favors for you. You get new abilities and things. If they dislike you, you'll get new abilities because they fear you or because they hate you and they slip up. It's not, you know, it's not an advantage just to make everyone happy. And that's like one of the most shallow things about role-playing games is it's literally just, you know, usually it's like, just go around and fill up all the meters.
Yeah, how happy can I make everybody?
And just, you know, you just want to do the things that get you the most stuff. And this, it's, you know, any way you want to do it is the proper path. And that's really, really impressive, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think one thing to note, this was true of Pillars 2, and it's going to continue to be true of probably everything else Josh Sawyer does in this, like, CRPG revival mode we're in, is that there's not a whole lot of emphasis on classes.
No, it's classless.
It's essentially classless. You start off, you kind of pick some classes, you kind of specialize in specific roles, but and that was true of Pillars too. You kind of choose a class, but there's no limits in terms of like, I want to be a mage who can do wield a hammer and, you know, cast a spell on himself to buff his weapon before he smashes down. You can totally do that, and it's not a problem. You can be amazing that way.
Yes.
And that's true of every other thing too. You could be an archer who only does defensive spells, or, you know, puts spells on other people to draw aggro so that they never have to deal with enemies coming towards them. It's amazing. Like I love the way that the actual customizability of what your character is capable of doing plays out in this game.
Tons of freedom. And the way you get experience in this game is by using your skills, and getting enough skill ups gives you a level up. So just you get better by doing stuff. You don't get like quest experience. Generally, you get, you know, experience by doing the things themselves, and that can be lots of different things. Like, you can't talk your way through every situation. It's not Fallout 2, but you do, you know, however you want to approach these conflicts. You know, and some situations you can talk your way out of.
Yeah.
You do get kind of commensurate experience, and that plays into that favor and reputation and Wrath system, where like you can intimidate somebody, or you can be like, hey, I did you this favor, like let me past, and you'll get points for that too. It's just kind of rewarding the way you want to play in a really free way that is I have a lot of respect for.
It also does the thing that we're missing a lot in modern RPGs too. You can just kill anybody. Including like the Archons right out. You could try and fight them the first interaction with them. Like, you have the dialogue option to start a fight with them. You're gonna get crushed, but you have the dialogue option to just start a fight, and if you manage to work your way out of that, I don't know how the game would fucking play out, because you'd be missing an entire half of the story. But it's cool.
It's a good question. Like, I should look that up. I mean, even not even down to the Archons, but you can be just like, man, fuck this, like I don't want to do this, you know. And like, it's it allows for role playing in a way that I think is just open. Mm-hmm. Because the assumption that like the way that good and evil is handled in role playing games is pretty bad.
Yeah.
Almost even games I really like. You know, like even in something like Fallout 2, which I love, like if you're evil, like you do some slaving, you know, and that's real bad. but it's not there's not as much of like a nuance for your character. Like that's just a direction and now it's like I am bad.
Right.
Here you can it allows for you to be kind of like more like tactical in it, or just to kind of be like, I'm gonna play a guy who, you know, so like the mindset I did, you know, the role playing, the thing that guided my decisions, was both these guys are fucking clowns. Yep. I can do this better. I want to take this over and I'm gonna make a power play for the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like I'm gonna be the new Kyros, but of the South and take on North Kyros. But that means I need these people to like me. I'm not gonna side with the rebels. You know, I want to be, you know, I want to dominate
right.
them.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to, you know, and it allows for that where like somebody could be like, hey, you know, we're gonna let you pass this bridge if you go do X with us, and you can be like, no. like you are, I don't need you, you know, I don't need that in this, you know, I'm not. And then you get into a fight and you bypass the thing, you know, or you go do the task and you buy like it just allows a lot of different freedom, different freedoms. And it is one of the more rich, like it's really up there in like rich role-playing experiences.
Yeah, absolutely.
For me, with the best of Obsidian stuff, like the thing it most reminds me of is New Vegas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I talked about before, but it plays a lot like New Vegas and how you interact with the world.
Totally. I think that an important thing about the fact that you are not beholden to either of these groups too is that they will try to make you beholden to them. There's a point where they essentially very early in the game are forcing you to be like, you have to aid one of us. We're both going to go take this place. Which one of us do you want to lead the charge? Which one do you want to come with you? And if you say like, I'm not like, you guys figure it out, they'll be like, no, fucker, like that's what you're here for.
Yeah. this is your job.
This is your job. Like, choose a side. And so they force you to choose, but you can still just not, they can only make you choose so far, right? They can only make you say which one of us is charging in.
You throw off the yoke.
Right.
You know, and that just opens up other options, you know, for what to do at that point. It's very impressive. And it's something too, where like, again, one of the complaints of it being kind of short or ending a little suddenly, I feel like this is the perfect length for that.
Yeah.
Because if you kept it up at some point, it would start stretching credulity. Because it's something this game does that is a really tough line to walk. Like I don't usually like in video games is kind of like pumping up the player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you are in this game, the character you play, even if you toe the line the entire time, you are a very powerful, like special person of this world.
Yes.
And the game recognizes that. That's something I usually don't like. But because I made it, like it's like it's talking. They're actually it's based on decisions I made. It's not like Commander Shepard showing up and everyone be like, "Yo, it's Shepard. I love Shepard." You know, I didn't have anything to do with that. That's not
right.
My thing. You know, and if like I did the, you know, I did the Renegade option or the Paragon option, but everyone just thinks I'm amazing for literally just clicking between sort of rude and ultimate good. Right. You know, there's context to this thing. It's this thing I created, you know, mm-hmm. It feels more like me when somebody comes over and they're just like, oh, like, I know this isn't something to fuck with, or like, oh, like, one of the cooler things is one of the other Archons, without spoiling too much, will kind of hitch himself to your wagon. If you make the right decisions,
yeah,
we'll be like, hey, I see which way the wind is blowing. Like, you know,
I'm interested to see how that plays out. Like, let's see the spoiler section, because I got something totally different with that one.
And it just, yeah, and that's an even another point, is that it can play out a lot of different ways.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's made to be replayed. I think that's probably about it for mechanical stuff. I mean, there's other stuff, of course, there's other minor things,
mm-hmm.
but that gives kind of, I feel like that's the selling it on the non-spoiler part.
Yeah.
Like, if you like old computer games, and specifically if you like role-playing in a video game, if that's appealing to you, and I say that recognizing that it's not for everybody.
Right.
You know, I had a bunch of conversations about this game on Slack, and some people, you know, are literally just like, oh, I can't just not play, like, the good guy in a game. Like, I can't, this doesn't appeal to me because I'm not just saving the world. And that's fine. You know, if that's you, that's you. It's not me, though.
Yeah,
I like to have a variety of experiences. I like to be able to craft a compelling character because it gives me a feeling of like ownership over the world and the story that ordinarily I wouldn't get.
And I think it's also really important that in most games, you know, the problem is the choice is not like get forced into the good guy, because if I don't choose to be the good guy, then I'm going to be the bad guy in every situation.
Yeah.
Like, I can only be a ruthless piece of shit or the good guy.
Yes.
This game, you can be both. Like, you can be this guy who is faithful to all of his companions and is doing cool, good shit for the people of the world if you want to, who's also the, you know, hand of this evil warlord. Like, you can be both at once. There's a gray line that is not typically written in most games.
The gray line is really important, and that's a thing. I can't remember if you played Alpha Protocol, but if you haven't, you should.
I definitely should. I haven't played it.
You'll like it. It's clunky. It's not nearly as clunky as people say it is,
right?
And it's it does this thing really well where it's like you can be kind of like, you know, a little shit, or you can be playing the long con.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not black or white, which is just like, you know, super, super important to me. I like that option a lot.
All right. So let's do a little bit of admin stuff real quick so we can get to the story, the important bit. So, you know, if you like the show, if you like the network, you want to help support us, patreon.com/duckfeedtv is the best way to do that. You'll get some goodies for any little bit of dollars you can throw at us a month. We really, really appreciate it. Otherwise, you know, ratings, reviews on iTunes, telling your friends, and of course, suggesting games and following us on twitter.com/checkitoutcomrade facebook.com/checkitoutcomrade and at Twitter Podcast on Twitter. At Comrade Podcast. Dude, I was doing so bad. At Comrade Podcast on Twitter.
Everyone forgives you.
It's okay.
It's quite all right.
So with that, we're going to do a little bit of a spoiler ditty here, and we'll be back and talking about some of the storyline of Tyranny.
So without going into everything, like, let's just kind of hit some good moments.
Totally.
You know, because again, we don't need to do a miniature WAF on it.
Mm-hmm.
So the coolest like thing that, so you get there, you have to choose between these two people, and you can still ally yourself with either group.
Yes.
You know, you complete the edict, as it is. But you can also say, fuck you, and then go rogue.
Yes.
At that point, which, like, at first that felt really cool and unique. I wonder if that's actually what most people did, because it's by far the coolest sounding and coolest thing you could do.
I stuck with, I think immediately after finishing up the edict, I threw a lot of shade towards Ash and was always like, you know, you guys are stupid. And like, I didn't just like kneel to voices at any point. Like, I was still like, nah, dude, like I'm helping you and I appreciate, you know, your help and whatnot, but this is not me being part of your gang. Mm-hmm. And that was the way I played most of it, which turned out to be not the way to get his ending.
Well, the way to get his ending, or one thing I read about in it, when you get to that point, well, let's get to that.
Sure.
Because I read a thing, and I wonder if this is why it, and you'll be able to answer if this is the reason why it didn't come up that way. So you can go independent that way. You can kind of work in with these different kind of factions. But the cool thing is that, like, life moves on, you know, it doesn't, like, the game doesn't end there. Like, Kuros kind of is like, okay, let's see how he's going to play this. Cause that's, you know, how he creates his lieutenants, is giving them these long leashes. And the kind of, the side effect of that is, you know, you move forward in time and, now things have advanced, like tensions have increased.
Yep.
You know, regardless of whether you happen, you now either have these enemies or allies, but there's still work to be done.
And they still hate area. Each other.
And they still, you cannot bring them together. I don't think you can actually, I think you can bring one of them under you. But I don't think you can bring both of them under you.
No. Yeah, I'm pretty sure your choice at that point, unless you seriously hurt the other one, you're either going to be siding with one or the other. I don't think there's any way you can possibly get them both happy.
Yes. So you move on. And the second act, so that's the first act, is kind of like learning about this world. You're also introduced to the rebels at this point, which you can side with, which is the next playthrough I want to do, because I think it'll feel pretty differently.
I'm very interested to see what happens when you side with the people who are not Kuros's
the subjugated people. The second act is mostly about getting these kind of artifacts and activating these towers, which is kind of your base building aspect to this, similar to in Pillars of Eternity, actually, and kind of getting these artifacts. If you're working with a faction, how does that articulate? Because it was, for me, Bled and Mark, who is the Archon of Shadows, the assassin, came and said, like, hey, I like the cut of your jib. Go do this thing. If you're going to make a power grab, this is what you need. And kind of set me on that path to go find those.
On a path to find the other towers after the first one,
or find the artifacts.
Oh,
that you need to get.
I'm not sure. Which artifacts are you referring to?
There's like a helm. There's a sword. Maybe this is different, even more different than I thought.
Yeah. Wow, your playthrough is really crazy. Okay. So each of those artifacts are important to the little townships that you're helping. Those play out in my playthrough as, especially like the helm at the Iron Forge area, mm-hmm. right? That's like, this is our source of iron. They are having problems with the creatures coming out of the old walls. Yep. So they're crafting this helm. Go help them get everything situated. Go help them fight off these monsters from the old walls. Get everything set up so that our flow of iron doesn't stop. That's how that played out for me.
Okay.
At no point did they want me to get the helm. Like, they wanted me to help them get the helm situated.
Gotcha.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Cool. If you're doing the power grab, it's hey, you're gonna need this stuff.
Wow.
To do that, and you still have a choice of how you're treating the individual settlements,
mm-hmm.
With it, other than the fact that like you ultimately take the thing,
right?
So I took the helmet, which did have catastrophic effects for that settlement, but that was the thing. And it's you do so the way it worked for me is in between missions,
mm-hmm.
I would go and meet in this glade and meet with Bled and Mark, who would then like test me.
Dude,
and
that's sometimes, so
like,
rad.
Literally, like he like there's a part where he like if he like pulls a knife on you and throws it at you and you can catch it. And stuff, and you're like gaining his respect and stuff, and you learn about his backstory.
That's amazing.
It's super cool. And the really awesome moment that came for this when I was talking about when you go independent was like, because I was siding with the voices too, but you get up to the top of the thing and they're like, what do you do now? They're trying to get you to kill the rebel leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, the rebel leader dies, but also you do. And you can write a note in his arm and kick him off your tower.
Yeah.
Which is like, it's the ballerest thing. That,
yeah, right.
You know, one of the most baller things a game has ever allowed
me
to do.
I think that was an option for me, but I ended up returning him back to get justice from Tudon or something.
Yeah, which is also fine. Like, I want to play it that way as well. I want to try allying with everybody. So the second act was mostly while you're either you're getting artifacts and you're unlocking these towers.
Getting the tower, yeah. For the most part, that's the main thing is that the different. God, what do they call them?
I'm bad.
Yeah.
I don't. It's actually so. It's been I beat this in December, so it's been 2 months. Since I played this, I'm trying to remember the name of them, but there's five towers that you set up as different kind of base building things. So you do that essentially, and while you're doing it, you're introduced to these different factions and kind of the world and how it's suffered under Kyros's army. And one of the things is that Kyros's army is already splintered, you know, these different factions within it. So, you know, like the Stonebinders, are not particularly, you know, towing the line. And are going off and doing their own thing with this other, like the Archon of Stone or whatever, who is this gigantic rock golem thing. There's just tons of cool flavor during the second act. It's the longest act.
And you're breaking edicts the whole time.
Yes. Yeah. You're breaking edicts that show up. So like there's the Edict of Burning that you can set up in this library. If you go there, you actually undo it.
Yeah.
Because the wording of it is as long as there's knowledge within this, the library will burn,
mm-hmm.
and you can take all of the knowledge for yourself.
Yep.
And then it no longer burns. And then like you said, put out this gigantic fire. One really cool, did you know that, you know, that first edict that you do,
mm-hmm.
That's like, if people haven't figured things out by like the Eighth of Swords or whatever.
Yeah.
If you wait until it's past the Eighth of Swords and then read the edict, you have a whole year to complete it.
Whoa.
Because it doesn't specify the year. So it's like, you have to finish this by the next time, you know, it's the 8th of March or whatever.
That's funny. And
it's pretty cool. Like, what a cool little detail.
How did they make this game? Like, why did they have time to make this?
I love that. Like, little detail porn thing, stuff like that is, like, my favorite thing.
That's awesome. My mind's still blown that you had a whole separate, like, storyline grabbing you for between all the different sessions with Bleed and Mark than I did.
I'm sure what we actually did was the same, but context matters. Yeah. You know? Like, I'm sure we went to the same dungeons and stuff.
Oh, yeah. There's only so many maps, but it's really cool that they not only had, like, the two different plot lines of the story of the two factions grabbing you, but also this shadowy figure to, like, hey, I see what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really cool. And he can betray you as well, and you can have to fight him, but I got his meter up enough.
That's awesome.
So, which you just do, and he likes, again, it's not just like be nice to everyone. Like, oh, he yeah. likes sass. Like, you have to get treat him like, let him know, like, hey, like, don't fuck with me. You have to scare him off a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is super cool.
You kind of have to do some of that. You have to be, like, powerful, but also a little bit edging up to for voices. Like, you have to kind of stroke his ego while also being, like, not just sucking up to him. He doesn't want weaklings. He doesn't like people who are just, like, bending the knee to him. But you also do need to be, like, thoughtfully stroking his ego. Like, he knows he's got all these different minds inside of him. He knows he's powerful. You need to, like, you can't just be, like, you know, sucking his dick the whole time. But if you'd be, like, we can totally do this because we have this on our side and you have the best army, you have the most people, so this makes perfect sense. And if you poise it to him in these, like, logical senses, then he's like, you're totally right.
Yeah, very, very cool. And I imagine that Graven Ash is more towing the line.
That's
like,
what
it's
I
more militaristic
too.
Like, you have to be a little bit more loyal, but you can eventually convince, the way that articulates, if you in the third act, if you take over that faction, it's convincing him and the rest that you would be a better leader.
Yeah,
like, they're just kind of through strength, which is cool. The third act essentially is you get the power to write edicts.
Yeah. And this is the coolest turn in an RPG ever, from like,
yes,
I'm just part of this world, to holy shit, I'm in a very important figure.
Yeah. Like, I can do this thing, because eventually Kuro says, and it kind of makes sense, like, you know, because we don't actually ever hear from him. We just hear from people who are kind of around him and through Tunon. But he's just like, hey, if you guys are all powerful and keep fucking around and kind of are getting into this, you know, power play, whoever wins gets it.
Yep.
You know, like, he's doing kind of a grander version of, because he's a, you know, sociopath, he or she, there's a part where you can gender Tunon or Kuros. Like, Kuros doesn't have a gender, and then you get two options, and one of them's like, he does this, she does this. Like, it's up to the player.
Just one of those three choices.
Yeah, which I like a lot.
Tunon always refers to him as she, but other characters have referred to him as he the whole time.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that's true. You can do it however you want. Oh, another thing. In this world, it's illegal to name your character, or name anybody Kuros. So if you name your character Kuros in the character select, it stops you from doing it. which is, like, super good. So at the end, he's just kind of like, hey, figure it out. Because you have been undoing these edicts, you get this power and you can now proclaim them, and you have to deal with whoever's left. And it's either the rebels or the disfavored or the voices, or all of them, at this point.
Yeah. And that mine was essentially all of them.
Yeah.
So you can issue these edicts, and they give you, typically sort of a buff for you and a nerf for enemies, because you know what you're putting down, so you can make use of them. But they all come out in different ways. So some may increase certain types of spells or magic overall, or some might just diminish magic entirely, so leave things just to physical strength.
Yes.
And it's really neat. And you mentioned this in a game night previously about how there's like three ones to unlock, and you're interested about that. I found one of them you get by researching.
The malediction one?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. But yeah, there's still two more. I don't know where those come from.
Because did you get knight? I think that I got knight, and I don't know how I got knight.
No, I got fire and the stone, the earthshaking one.
Okay, I think fire, storm, and stone are the ones that you get.
I didn't get storm because I didn't do
something different with that.
Yeah,
that area.
Yeah, and then I got malediction through research.
The I didn't get malediction.
So it must play out through the beginning.
It could.
Yeah, through the Choose Your Own Adventure, because I know edicts get issued there. Two different edicts get issued there. So depending on which ones you take place in, which ones you put into the storyline, could be what happened, what you are able to then break and then use yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it is. That's cool.
Yeah, which that's pretty cool if that's what's going on.
Yeah.
So we get to the end, and you pretty much fight everybody, depending on what they think of you and whether you can convince them to, you know, to join you or what have you, things like that. I think that happened. So with when I was looking at it, like the voices of Neerot, loyalty thing, or the way to get him to side with you at the end. If you, and you might not just have the meters up high enough, but if you have the right disposition with him, he asks you to sacrifice one of your companions. And that companion has to have at least four loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have people who had four loyalty?
Yes. But I didn't have enough loyalty with him. So here's what happened.
Okay.
He says that you must, you know, by a show of faith, you must give him one of your allies. And I gave him, I actually reverted my save to attempt this a couple times, but the first time I gave him, what's her name? The Scarlet Chorus girl.
Okay. Verse.
Yeah, Verse. Who I had very, she was my bestest buddy in the game. Yeah, so.
Verse is my buddy as well.
Yeah, I love Verse. So I gave him Verse and she was like, wow, really? And so he sucks her up and then he just fucking fought me anyway. And at that point, he's just so goddamn powerful. Like he actually gets a buff based on the character that you let him suck up.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And I read up on it. And so if you do have enough loyalty with him, it actually changes how he cooperates with you based on who you gave him as well. So like you can give him like Landry, and Landry can like logically convince him why everything's better your way. Like each character actually has an impact on how voices then
how it plays out. That's awesome.
That's so neat.
Yeah, that's really, really good. I love that. Who was in your party? Who'd you end up using?
So I had voices, or sorry, I had Verse and Landry, the Tidebender, or not Tidebender, but yeah, Ebb.
Tidecaster.
And then I switched between the disfavored guy and someone else. Who is it?
Hold on, Beric.
Yeah, I switched between Beric to have. No, I can. You only have the three, right? Yourself plus those.
Oh yeah, I guess that's true.
So I switched Beric out for Ebb. At that point, I never had Kills and Shadow in my party, and I know Siren's neat, but I never had her in my party because at that point my party's cohesiveness was great. I had the coolest party. So
Siren's really cool. She's just real fiddly.
Yeah.
Like she's like the bard characters from Pillars of Eternity.
Right.
I didn't have Lantre, I had a Beric instead, and he was my guy who I ruled through fear.
So
but then I had my lesbian kill squad for everybody else.
The way I played most of the time was me and Verse were up in their faces, fucking shit up. And Ebb would cast she had one really amazing spell that is a Gravelight spell that imbues elements into your into your weapon, and it gives you a vampiric weapon is what it does. So it imbues the element, and like you take health every time you're hitting them.
Yes.
So that one was killer. And then Lantry was mostly our healer, but he also had some pretty good AoEs and stuff on himself too.
Yeah. Each character, they don't have your character doesn't have classes, which we talked about, but your characters kind of do. They have different builds.
Well, they start off
prescribed.
Yeah. They're prescribed because they're built up in a certain way, but you still have a choice between kind of two different builds for each of them.
Yeah, two or three.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's ones that can do different things. So you can kind of do different options. Since I played a caster, I needed to have Beric with me, so like Beric and Verse on the front lines.
Right. Yeah.
It's kind of weird how you really just get one tank. Kills and Shadows is not a tank. Even though she's a big beast woman.
Oh really? She can't really hang out.
She has a lot of hit points, but she can't wear armor, so her damage reduction is not great. And then she's all about doing things from stealth, which is a mechanic that I didn't get a lot of really understand, or I didn't really like know how to use that to my advantage.
I use stealth a lot for initiation. I would use Landry's. He's got this this quill that has a really big range on it and can do like a pretty significant damage, and does even more when coming out of stealth. Mm-hmm. So I would use that to break up parties as much as possible. So your fog of war is a little bit bigger than his range of weapon is, but essentially anyone who's within your fog of war, even if can't be seen from stealth with them, as soon as you activate battle, anyone within your fog of war will be a part of that battle. But yes. I could kind of use his massive range on his quill to out of stealth attack the person who's most outside of everyone else and get just get like half of the encounter to pull. It worked out really well.
I did that too. I just did it without stealth and did it with versus flame arrow.
Oh yeah, that's a really good way to do it too. Yeah, her arrow's got a huge AoE or her huge range as well.
So it's really cool that we talked about that in the first part of this, but I really love that you can break those rules and stuff, which is something that, God, what is the last thing that we did where you couldn't do that? We played something for this. Oh no. You didn't, Neverwinter Nights too. You can't.
Oh yeah.
I hate that. Like, I mean, it's closer to Divinity Original Sin where, it's like, I've seen these guys. Why can't I get the drop on them? Why do I have to walk up to them and talk to them?
Right.
You know, and this game kind of ameliorates that. Like some people you do have to talk to, but you can get advantages with them based on your stats. So something that I could do is I could be like, you know, I'm the person who burned down that library, right? And then all like two of their mages would run away.
That's so
things
fun.
Like that.
That's so fun. I love that. Messing up the encounter just by like intimidation. It worked out really well.
It's really, really great. And then the end game, like, so the way it worked at the end for me is I went to my trial with Tunin, through like witnesses and helping out, you know, people in the town or whatever in the settled area, was able to get them to not to find me innocent of things that like I'd clearly done.
I got to be innocent as well.
Did you get Tunin on your side?
Yes, Tunin loved me.
Yeah, I recruited Tunin and I'm like, hey, I'm gonna be the new Kyros, and he's like, yep. So it was me and all the, you know, people I'd taken out, and then it ends with, you know, after I've fought everybody, with, you know, it saying like Kyros isn't gonna take this lying down, essentially.
Yeah.
And setting up a blatant sequel or DLC.
Yeah.
Where it's a war. But I really want to see this game, like, you know, fucking with edicts, doing that kind of map strategy part of it.
Yep.
You know, with like, I'm gonna send this general, I'll send Tunin and the Fatebinder army or whatever to this area with this edict. I will send, you know, the Forgebound to this area and protect it with this so they can outfit this army. Like, I really want that.
I mean, that's like your last choice in the game, essentially, is to put an edict in the way of Kyros coming after you.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
It's very good.
So I got essentially the same ending, I think, as you, because of the fuck up with voices earlier, except that I also had to do a fight with Bleeding Mark at the end.
Okay.
So, like, literally after Tunin was on my side, Bleeding Mark shows up and he's like, you know that Kyros isn't going to have this, right? Like, he's just like, he's still playing the side of, you know, he didn't call it, so he's going to end it. And then you fuck him up and he's like, holy shit, I was wrong about you. Like, you freak him out a lot when you end it with him.
That's cool. Yeah, I got to do another playthrough at the very least because I need to see how those guys fight. Because a lot of the fights are really similar, but the boss fights are all pretty different.
This is a good game, man.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really good, and it doesn't, again, you know, 33 hours, it probably was closer to like 29 or 30.
Exactly, yeah. Some of those are just
and
leave them
into playing it again, it'll be, I won't read all the lore stuff, I already read it, so I've got another playthrough in me that will be for sure a different way to play.
Totally.
So I'm very excited. I'm excited, obviously, for Pillars 2 and stuff, but this setting and everything I like more than Pillars.
Mm-hmm, me too.
And I'm, you know, I'm really excited for them to announce a follow-up to this, and I hope it was successful enough to do it.
I hope so, too.
I think that's pretty good.
That's probably about it. So thanks for listening, guys. And we'll catch you next time.
Yeah. Take care. Good night.
Bye.